Chilean Podcast with David Amoyal.
Benvenuti, as we would say in Italy. Welcome to all of you that don't speak Italian. Thank you so much for joining us for the first episode, for the second episode of the week of the Calcio Land podcast. So Alex and I are recording Friday morning. We're going to get ready for the weekend in Serie A. We have Thousand Names on deck with his game picks. And we have two excellent guests. Today we are going to take a tour of Italy's capital. We're going to cover both Lazio and Roma, catch up with them a little bit. So I think you'll enjoy those interviews. But before we get to all that, I wanted to ask our good friend Alex Goldberger, producer, co-host of the show, about Giroud, who has been linked to Serie A in previous transfer windows. We know with the Euro coming, he's been itching to play a little bit. But man, he finally gets a chance to play in the Champions League and puts in a historic game. So I have to ask you, Alex, A, what was the reaction to that great performance by Giroud? And B, do you think a performance like that makes it more or less likely that he'll leave in January? On one hand, of course, he's very valuable to Chelsea. But on the other, this is a guy who still has it. So what do you make of that?
My reaction to the game, wow. I mean, what a player. Really, one of the most underrated players since I have started following the sport. That's got to be true. Just because he obviously is not a flashy striker. He's your old-fashioned type of striker. So when you think of the best strikers around, for multiple reasons, you don't think of Giroud in there. But talk about dependable. Talk about a guy that just scores, whether it's for club or country. Talk about a guy that's clutch. What a week it's been for him. He had the winner for Chelsea in the Champions League against Rennes, and then he gets the start against Sevilla, who are not an easy team to thrash, David. And he scores four goals and redefines a perfect hat trick, or you could call it a quad trick, but he gets left, right, head, penalty. Unbelievable. So, yeah, now on his future. Well, it's good timing that you're asking this, because late last night via the Chelsea website, some quotes came out from Giroud saying that he thinks he can manage to stay now and just play a little bit more, which is not a change of the tune from when he last spoke, but it's just more factual. When he last spoke, he really hadn't played much at all so far this season.
Yeah.
And he was saying, well, you know, I did think I'd play more than this, so obviously I am going to have to think about a move in January, because we know that spot with France, he's still their starter. It's very important to him, as it should be. He's going after his own records for France, and of course we got the Euros in the summer. So you understand that. But now, well, even though Werner plays a lot, Tammy Abraham plays a lot, Giroud is going to have to play more. And maybe he's also leapfrogged Tammy just for right now as kind of second string, and that can be a battle. But as a Chelsea fan, before I kind of fully answer the question, as a Chelsea fan, I've been saying for weeks that Frank Lampard needs to do his best to finesse the situation. Meaning, of course, you got to play your Timo Werner. You got to play your Tammy Abraham because he's young, he's good, he's an asset. You haven't signed him to a long contract yet. So I understand that Lampard needs to play both of those players, and he should play both of those players. But play Giroud enough. Play Giroud enough where Giroud doesn't feel like his France spot is threatened, that he then stays at the club till the end of the season. And I think this last game was a huge step in the right direction for that. I think Giroud now kind of agrees. I think, and this is something my co-host on my own podcast brought up for the post pods I do, he was just saying, if Giroud can just feel a part of this really special thing that Chelsea have going on, if he can just feel a part of it enough, then I think he'll want to stay. And then a few hours later, the quotes come out from Giroud that it does look much more likely that staying could work out. So as of right now, I think he stays. I do think he stays because he's very important to this Chelsea squad. And I'll bring up one reason, not to get too knee deep into Chelsea, but for anybody out there thinking like, oh, Alex, you're being so spoiled. You already have Timo Werner and Tammy Abraham and obviously Ziyech and Pulisic and all those other players. Why do you need Giroud? Well, at the striker position, Chelsea have two classic strikers in Abraham and Giroud. And Giroud's experienced, and it's a good contrast. But most importantly, if people have ever heard of Reece James or Hakim Ziyech, they are two of the best in the world at putting in crosses. And that is one department where Chelsea are not good in terms of finishing crosses. So when the season wears on and Chelsea are in so many competitions, if Reece James is still putting in peaches and not getting assists, or Ziyech as well, well, you have Giroud there. You have Giroud there. So I think for so many reasons, it's smart to keep him till the end of the season. And what's really amazing, David, is not every manager could phase out a player this much for two seasons in a row like Lampard has done, but then still keep a phenomenal relationship with that player. So that's very key here. There's been some past Chelsea managers that have phased out players and the relationships have gone really poorly between said manager and player. So Lampard, of course, you kind of expect that he would be the manager to keep a good relationship with a player, but credit to Giroud as well. So David, I am leaning definitely. I know you can argue it both ways. Like, oh, wow, he had a great game in the Champions League, and now other teams who want a striker and an experienced striker as well are going to come knocking for him. But I think that good performance, great performance on Wednesday, helped Chelsea's chances the most of keeping Giroud. So, yeah, that's my take. But obviously, I was on Twitter last night. I see a little Inter rumor pop up. I know there's always rumors for Giroud in Serie A these days. So what's your take on all of it?
Yeah, no, and I appreciate your perspective. Very, very interesting. Look, you know, I think the bottom line for Giroud is if he were to leave Chelsea, it has to be a situation where he's going to be a clear starter with an opportunity to shine. To me, anything short of that, it's like, you know, why do it? We know he loves living in London. He said that. And look, I've always found his quotes very interesting. I'm not saying he talks from both sides of his mouth, because sometimes, you know, he says Chelsea and he dismisses all the rumors in the moment linking him to Serie A club. And I don't blame him. I mean, if you were at your job, you wouldn't be going around saying, yeah, I'm interviewing, I'm doing all these things to your colleagues either. So, yeah, but then later on, months later, he'll say, yeah, you know, there was definitely something there. So look, he's been linked to a lot of different Serie A clubs, most recently Juve. If you remember, you know, when things didn't go well with Suarez, it seems there's more development on that Italian test. And then the Dzeko Milik thing didn't go through. Giroud was right there. And look, Morata's been sensational for Juve. As much as I like Giroud, if you're a Juve fan, you have to be pretty happy with how that went. But Juve was just the latest Serie A team he was linked to. I'm going to close out Juve as a possibility for him because of already Dybala's having a hard time finding playing time. So we can take them off the table. Other teams that he's been linked to in the past was Lazio on a Bosman deal. I would say that's completely out. Caicedo, as the bench player for Immobile, has been very good this season. They invested a lot in Muriqi, who looks like a bust, but they have strikers, so we can take Lazio off the table. Inter, you know, for a while they were looking for a backup for Lukaku, and Jesus, you know, that's as good a backup you're going to get for Lukaku with Giroud, but that makes no sense for him to do that. That feels like almost the worst situation than where he's at Chelsea, so we can take them off the table. And I know Milan fans, for good reason, are like, listen, Zlatan's really old. We might be in the Scudetto race. Giroud makes sense for us. To a certain extent, I agree. But is for Giroud, does it make more sense to be at Chelsea or in the Champions League and, you know, compete for playing time there or go to Milan and be Zlatan's backup and wait for him to get injured? I'm not sure if they could play together. I mean, Giroud's a great player, probably could figure it out. So I don't know. To me, as much as I understand why Milan fans would want it, and it would be in an ideal world, you would have him as a backup to Zlatan, I don't see it. I'm going to throw one team that I think marginally makes sense. It's Fiorentina. They are desperate for a striker, a central striker that will score, that will improve the team. They are in very bad shape right now. Their sporting director, Prade, recently talked about the striker situation and basically put it as dreadful. They have signed big-name players, of course, Ribery. There, he absolutely plays. Now, of course, that's a significant salary and all. That's not a rumor. There's no links or anything. I'm just looking at what makes sense to me in Serie A. Roma, I would take out because they have Borja Mayoral, who they signed to be Zeko's backup. So Fiorentina, to me, is the only team that I see as a clear improvement. But for Giroud to be kind of in the relegation race in Serie A to play over Chelsea, I don't know. So I think I tend to agree with you. I'd be kind of surprised if he leaves in January. But that being said, I definitely think he'll be in rumors, especially after that great game. Okay, so let's get ready for the weekend in Serie A. Like in recent weeks, Thousand Names been sending me picks that I'm not reviewing ahead of time, which can be dangerous, but we'll get to them now. So as usual, we're going to go over three games. I'll read them in English and Italian for our friends in Italy tuning in to hear what Thousand has to say. So first game, Derby della Mole. Juve Torino, Morata out two games. This should be a great game for Dybala. Let's see what Thousand says. He has it 1-1. Goals by McKinney and Ansaldi. He has Bonucci getting a red card. And he says Pirlo can't even beat Giampaolo, who he put as Jean-Paul, which is the way some people make fun of him in Italy. And he says that Dybala is going to make people forget Vadala. And that he says the fans are pushing for Allegri's return. In Italian, Juve Torino 1-1. McKennie Ansaldi espulso Bonucci. Pirlo non vince nemmeno contro Jean-Paul. Dybala fa rimpiangere Vadala. I tifosi spingono per il ritorno di Allegri. I've been telling you guys I am pretty bullish on Juve. If I could do it over, I would definitely pick them to win the Scudetto. Torino, kind of in free fall. They have the worst defense in Serie A. They gave up the most goals. Giampaolo's going back to the three-man defense his predecessors used. Although Morata's not playing, I'm going to have Juve win 2-0, and I'll give Ronaldo a brace on this game. Next up, Inter hosting Bologna. Thousand has Inter winning 3-0, hat trick by Lukaku. He says Lautaro is going to miss a penalty. Vidal is going to get a red card. Conte is going to destroy Sinisa Mihailovic and is ready to focus on the Scudetto in the first place of the group stage in the Champions League. He says Eriksen is going to be delicious in this game and that Handanovic is going to go back to being a wall. So, interestingly, Bologna had their first clean sheet in over 400 days. I do think Inter look like they are turning things around a little bit. So I'm going to agree with Thousand. I'm going to have Inter winning, but not by that big margin. I'm going to go 2-1. I'll give Lautaro and Lukaku a goal. And for Bologna, I'll give a goal to Barrow. So I have both Juve and Inter winning. Next up, we have Lazio traveling to Spezia. Thousand has Lazio winning 2-0, goals by Lazzari and Marusic. I guess he likes their wing backs in this game. He says Inzaghi is going to celebrate the draw against Dortmund by winning in the league and that he's doing a miracle both tactically and technically, but that he does say Correa and Luis Alberto are far behind what they were last year. In Italian, Spezia Lazio 0-2, Lazzari Marusic. Limone Inzaghi festeggia il pareggio di Dortmund vincendo anche in campionato. Miracolo tecnico-tattico. Correa e Luis Alberto lontani parenti di quello dell'anno scorso. I like Spezia. Lazio have been pretty uneven. They lost at home to Udinese. I'm going to go 0-0 on this one and give a point to my man, the manager of Spezia, Italiano. So thank you, Thousand. Always a pleasure to have you on the podcast. So now let's get to Lazio. Been a little while since we talked to them. I'm glad to welcome back our good friend Alistair McKenzie. So let's see our update on the Bianco Celesti. Okay, so today we are going to cover the two teams in Italy's capital. And I'm very excited that for the Lazio side, we have once again, who's become one of my favorite calcio journalists, Alistair McKenzie. He's based in Rome and I think does a fantastic job covering all Italian football. You can read him on Reuters, The Times, 442, but on Lazio specifically does a superb job with Lazio Lounge. Definitely check out that podcast. So, Alistair, always a pleasure to chat with you, my friend. Bentornato to Calcioland.
Well, thanks again for another very flattering introduction. Yeah, I mean, it's very nice to be back on again, especially because I think the last time I was on was also after the Dortmund game, if I'm not wrong. So, yeah, it seems that my visits coincide with Lazio doing quite well in Europe. So the more of them, the better, probably.
Yeah, now there's a big game coming. Maybe I should invite you again to help the coefficient. Yeah, so we're going to start on Lazio. I'm also very curious because I know you've been traveling around Italy to stadiums, and I'm curious to get your perspective there. But let's start with Lazio, and let's start with the Champions League, because I think this season there wasn't, you know, huge expectations for Lazio in the Champions League, maybe tied to the transfer window, their seeding and whatnot. But are you surprised by how well they've performed in Europe so far?
Well, yeah, I mean, to a certain extent, yes. I think that we didn't really know what to expect, to be honest, because it's been 13 years since Lazio have been at this level. I mean, they have been knocking on the door the last few seasons under Inzaghi, but I guess it's always a different, completely different test playing from Serie A to Champions League. Obviously, once the draw was made, I think that fans started to become a little bit more confident just because there was no absolute behemoth of European football in the draw. But it's still a tricky group. And to be honest, if you'd given me five games unbeaten and, you know, don't lose to Bruges on the final day at home, I think any Lazio fan would have bitten your hand off for that opportunity. And especially when you consider that a couple of those away games they've had huge absences in the squad from the COVID outbreak and injury problems. It's been pretty remarkable, to be honest. I think the only frustration, and one that Inzaghi mentioned after the game last night, actually, is that they've played this well, and yet it's still coming down to one last game. Because I think the general feeling is that having taken 4 points from the two games against Dortmund, having come through the injury issues that they've had to get results away from home, having been unbeaten, they shouldn't be in a position where they can still go out. But that's where we are, and I think everyone's pretty happy with how they performed.
Yeah, to say the least. So you mentioned that, you know, going into the last game, you know, needing just the result against Bruges is great. How confident are you that they'll be able to get over that hump?
I mean, everything we've seen so far suggests that they should be okay. You know, like I've already said, they're unbeaten in the competition. In their two home games so far, they've been excellent in the Champions League, beating Dortmund and Zenit 3-1. The injury issues have cleared up as well. There's more players available to Inzaghi than there were before. And so I guess what it comes down to now is that I think there's still a few nerves around Lazio fans in particular when it comes to this kind of winner-takes-all scenario, because some people will think back to a couple of years ago at the final day of the season against Inter when they just had to draw to qualify for the Champions League and they messed it all up. And so there have been a few kind of concerns about this team's mentality, I guess, before, but I think they have improved a lot since then in that regard. And as long as they approach the game in the right way, they should have enough. Because, you know, when they went to Bruges before, they had basically a team of youth players on the bench, had a lot of injury problems, missing all their key players, missing Alberto, missing Immobile, missing Lucas Leiva. And so I think that they know that they've got enough to win this game, and they don't even need to win it. They just need to avoid defeat. So they've got reasons to be confident.
Yeah, and maybe just avoiding defeat might be kind of a catch-22. But I hear you. But I do think it's also important that you raise that match against Inter. Hopefully this is a more mature Lazio and they can get through. So I know I asked you this already the last time you were on. You know, there's been a lot of attention on Lazio's summer transfer window, which, you know, I would say was interesting. They did improve depth. I think that is without a doubt. So what do you make of them as a group? Is there one or two that really stands out to you of the new additions? And both good or bad, by the way.
Yeah, well, it's been interesting. I think that what we've already seen is that the summer additions have given Inzaghi a lot more confidence to rotate his team. And by that I mean at the end of last season when everything fell apart after the lockdown, Inzaghi did actually have some players fit, but he wasn't actually always using all of them. And so his key players kind of got very tired out very quickly by, you know, playing two games a week. Whereas this season, he's shown a lot more willingness to change around the team in order to get through this game, this run of games. And up until the Udinese match last weekend, which is a bit of a disaster,
he's done it
very well. Up until that point, he'd managed to get them on an 8-game unbeaten run in all competitions and was doing it effectively. So it's strange to say, but one of the ones who's stood out for me the most so far is actually Pepe Reina.
Because I agree.
We expected him to come in and not do much more other than offer a helping hand to Strakosha and aid in his development and step in when needed. But he's actually been excellent. He made a mistake last night, so it's not the best timing to say it, perhaps. But he's been had a bigger involvement than I expected. Also, Wesley Hoat deserves a lot of credit because
I agree.
There was so much doubt around whether that was the right move, the right idea, but he's been very confident coming into the centre of that defence. So really it's a strange one because I would say that the players we expected the least from are the ones who've performed the best, and the players we expected the best from are the players who've performed the worst, which is Mo Farris and Dera Marici. I think that Farris is under a lot of pressure now. I think because he'd played in Serie A before, because he played in a 3-5-2, because he'd played with Lazzari at Spal, I think there was an expectation that he would slot in a bit more effortlessly than he has. But he's had some pretty poor performances recently, and the fans are getting on his back a bit. I still do think he needs a bit of time, but it'll, you know, there's only a certain amount of time that players get, and he's had more minutes than any other new signing this season. So I think he's the one that we need to see the most improvement from.
Now, let me ask you real fast on Pepe Reina, and I agree with you. He's had a bigger impact than most people would have assumed. Do you think that says more about him or Strakosha, though?
Well, Strakosha's been unavailable a lot of that time. You know, he tested positive for COVID and was out for quite a long time, as waiting for his negative result to come through. He's also had his own injury problems as well. And Inzaghi has reiterated every time he's asked about it that Strakosha is the titolare and that he will be starting when he gets the opportunity. I just think it makes a huge difference being able to have a number two you can rely on, because last season Silvio Proto was that guy, but even when Inzaghi had the chance, even in the Coppa Italia games against Cremonese and games like this, he wouldn't be playing Proto. So Strakosha has been playing an awful lot of football, so it's no surprise that he's picking up the odd injury now. So I think it helps, and also that don't forget this team has very little Champions League experience in terms of the playing squad. So to have someone like Pepe Reina come in, who's seen it all and done it all before, you know, at Bayern Munich, at Liverpool, at Napoli, everywhere he's been, I think that can only help in terms of giving a bit of that winning mentality to the rest of the squad and the guys who are a bit greener in that competition.
For sure. No, absolutely. Great point there. So I have to ask you about Muriqi, because look, Tare is rightfully known for doing a great job finding talents in other leagues and maybe not the classic leagues, and he has a great track record with that. But I have to say he's also had a few misses and maybe a few recently. You know, we had Berisha, Durmisi, who really did nothing. Do you think Muriqi is going to be in line with those players? And Lazio, for their standards, they spent a lot on Muriqi, and Caicedo's been superb in essentially the role that I would say they were maybe hoping Muriqi would fill. So what do you think about him so far? Do you think he can be salvaged?
I've gone pretty easy on Muriqi so far compared to a lot of Lazio fans and a lot of neutrals as well. I just think that it's gonna require a lot of adaptation to his game to come over from Turkey. You know, despite his age, he's 26, I think. He's only ever played at that level. And so to come over to Serie A as a striker and try and work out how to get past these defences is a completely new task for him. And he is also, I think this is an important point, he's a kind of player that Inzaghi isn't used to having. So it's not just a case of him getting used to Serie A, but also of Inzaghi getting used to having a target man in his squad. Inzaghi's wanted that kind of player as an option, but he's never had one. So Inzaghi also needs to work out how to use Merici properly. The crosses from the wing-backs have been spectacularly inaccurate this season, which hasn't helped. If you're wanting to get balls in the box, that's where Merici's going to be most dangerous, but that's not really been happening for him. So I think that his injury came at a bad time because he seemed to be starting to kind of make a bit more of an impact off the bench in the couple of games he had before his injury. And I do think that just time is needed all around because, like I say, it's not only him who's getting used to this, but his teammates and his coach are getting used to how to use him and what to do with a player of his characteristics.
Okay, fair enough. So you're still going to give him a chance. I like it. So let's talk about Lazio and Serie A, where they fit in. So obviously last season they got over the hump. They were able to get back to the Champions League. But I would say the competition this year is probably harder. I think Milan, I'm not going to say they're a lock for a Champions League spot, but they look like they're definitely going to be more serious than last year. Napoli, to me, is improved. The Roma's off to a good start. Now, Atalanta's probably, I would say, they're going to have a hard time getting back to the Champions League. So how do you see Lazio fitting into the landscape of the top teams in Serie A?
Yeah, I mean, I still think they're up there. It's been a kind of inconsistent start to the season, but I think that they're going to be in the mix by the end of it. You're right. I think there are more candidates for top four places this season. I think that some of the other teams have improved. It does depend, obviously, on how they cope with this, the European commitments and so on. But so far, they've done a pretty good job of that. Up until the Udinese defeat, they're, like I already mentioned, they were on that good 8-match unbeaten run, and Inzaghi was rotating a lot more effectively. So in terms of the squad depth issue that everybody seemed to be most concerned about before the season, I don't think that's panned out to be quite as damaging as people expected. And this run of group games is going to be the most intense run as well. So yeah, I think that the run actually now from here until Christmas is really important because they messed up the Udinese match, and now they've got Spezia, they've got Benevento, they've got Verona coming up. Those are the kind of games that Lazio have to be winning if they're going to be in the mix at the end of the season. We've seen huge improvements from Milan, and it'll be interesting to see if that'll stay for the rest of the season. Roma, you're right to point out, have been much more impressive than anybody expected coming into this. And yeah, you know, the likes of Napoli, Sassuolo, Atalanta have had a poor start, but they're going to be up there too. It's really going to come down to, I think, who can avoid the most, who can avoid these freak results. That was one of my reactions to this Udinese defeat on the weekend, was that I think this season we're just going to see a lot of these kind of games happening where
I totally
we've seen it already across the leagues this season that these freak results are happening, and it's really a case of who can avoid that the most.
Yeah, I totally agree. I mean, look at Sassuolo Inter, the two teams going into that match in opposite trajectories. Lukaku doesn't start and Inter wins 3-0 with Hakimi on the bench. You're totally right. This is a very unpredictable season, and the teams that avoid games like that, you are right, are going to benefit. So you gave us a great perspective on Lazio, Alistair, but as I mentioned, what I really like is you are a journalist based in Italy, and recently I know you traveled to a few stadiums. So tell us which stadiums you visited and what stood out to you.
I've been quite lucky, really. I mean, obviously, it's as a journalist, you end up in a fairly privileged position anyway, being able to cover games as your job. But it's been especially a felt like a real privilege recently because of fans not being allowed in and so on. And so, yeah, I got up to Turin for the Juventus-Barcelona game. And then I was at Atalanta-Liverpool the week after that as well, and so I've been covering Roma and Lazio down here in Rome too. Yeah, I mean, it was interesting, particularly Turin. It was my first time visiting the Allianz, and therefore my first time visiting a modern Italian stadium. And what that might
it's
look
like.
It's
like night and day compared to other stadiums, right? It almost feels like a really nice arena in the United States compared to like the stadiums in Italy. It's like night and day. I think they did a really nice job there.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I just finished writing, which you can still find on the Blizzard, but I've written a huge kind of magnum opus about why it's so hard to build stadiums in Italy and for clubs. And it was on the back of that I went up there to have a look at it. And it is amazing just seeing the difference and the facilities they've got, but also the kind of community, maybe not the right word, but what they've built up around it with the museums and the shops and everything else. I mean, this is during a pandemic and the lockdown when there weren't even any fans around, and it was still impressive. And, you know, it's a good size. I think it's exactly the kind of arena that a lot of top clubs, both Roman clubs, for example, would really benefit from. And yeah, it was interesting then to go to Bergamo the next week and see their kind of work in progress, where it's a spectacularly kind of lopsided stadium where at one curva, it's this kind of state-of-the-art modern section, and the other is the kind of classic roofless crumbling stone curva of Italian football. So it's kind of like the old and new in front of you at once. So it was, you know, like I say, it's great to be able to travel around and get to new places and see new grounds. So unfortunately, both times the Italian teams lost quite badly, but there you go.
So I bring more good luck when I invite you to talk Lazio than when you go. Okay, so good to know. We'll keep that in mind for the coefficient. But I can't thank you enough, my friend. I've really enjoyed your third appearance. If you've enjoyed Alistair segment, and how could you not, definitely check out Lazio Lounge if you want to hear more on Lazio and all his great articles on calcio. So thank you so much for joining me, my friend, and I look forward to doing it again in the new year.
Thanks a lot, David. Keep up the great work and have a great Christmas when it comes.
Okay, guys, before we get to the other side of the Capitale and get to Roma, I just wanted to, we're going to do a segment for our patrons. We're recording this on Friday. Yesterday was World Disability Day, and I'm very proud that through our patron program, we've been supporting our friends, Insuperabili in Italy, really a superb organization. They run football calcio camps for kids with disability. They are doing this even remotely via Zoom. Thanks to the generosity of our patrons, we've made some substantial donations all year. We've made a real difference in these kids' lives, and I couldn't be prouder of that. So if you enjoy Calcioland, you'll be contributing to a good cause. I use all the money on Patreon to cover production costs and everything else we give to the Insuperabili. You'll get obviously longer episodes of the pod. You'll get bonus episodes of the pod. We try to do at least one a week, but we have Napoli Outsider on a special edition just for patrons once a month. We also have some cool articles. So if you like Calcioland, check it out. Okay, so we talked about Lazio earlier, and we're going to go to the other side of the Capitale in Italy. And I'm very excited to welcome a first-time guest. We've had a few recently. I am very excited to talk again because we just recorded his podcast, Steven Chaviolo, who is has one of the best Twitter handles on the platform, Chiesa di Totti. And you can check out the site, which is really terrific. There's an excellent podcast there. And actually, the handle is SS Chavillo CDT. But I always think of him as Chiesa di Totti. So, Steve, it's a real pleasure to speak to you and to welcome you to Calcioland. Benvenuto to our show.
Thanks for having me, David. I'm excited to come on and chat Roma with you.
Terrific. Excellent. Okay, Steve. So let's start with Roma. They are, on your podcast, we talk quite a bit that they are playing my favorite team in Serie A, Sassuolo. But let's take a big picture view of Roma. They did well in the Europa League today before we started recording. So if you could give a grade to Roma in all competitions this season, what would it be? And you can go with the American matrix, A through F, or you can do it how they do it in Italy from 0 to 10.
So if I were to go with the American, you know, grading system, I'd probably go with the B+. If I was going with the 0 through 10, maybe an 8.5, say. I've been very happy with Roma so far. You know, they were undefeated on the pitch this season up until the loss on Sunday against Napoli. I'm going to steal one of your favorite quotes here. I'm not going to be a prisoner of the moment and you know, harp on too much on the 4-0 loss because, yeah, you know, everyone has a bad day. It wasn't the heaviest defeat in the Fonseca era so far. But, you know, they caught Napoli on a day when, you know, Napoli was always going to have that extra motivation. You know, Dzeko was just back from COVID. So it was a tough loss. So besides the Napoli loss, the only other thing I really hold against Roma this season is that match against Juve, the second match day. They, you know, going in, if you told me they were going to draw 2-2, I'd say sign me up in a heartbeat.
Yeah,
the way the match played out, where they were up a man, up a goal, 2-1, and they gave up that goal to Ronaldo, up a man, stung. So that's the only other real negative to me this season has been that, besides the Napoli result. You know, I thought Milan coming back three times against the top of the table team to get out the point in the San Siro was a huge result. You know, you mentioned the Europa League, they advanced out of the group fairly easily. They've won 4 out of the first 5 with the draws being the other result. First time in their European history they've done that. So I think, you know, things have been very good for Roma so far. Even prior to this season, most of the summer restart was very positive for them outside the Sevilla loss. So I'm happy with Fonseca. I think he was under a lot of heat early. You know, Rome's a tough place to manage, but I think he's doing the best job he can do with the squad he has, the players he was given, given some COVID absences, some injury absences to players like Zaniolo. I give him a B+.
Yeah, I think that's very fair. And I think Fonseca deserves really a ton of credit. You know, I don't think he's ever really been in a completely comfortable situation at Roma. I mean, as comfortable as you can be as a Roma's manager, which we know is always very stressful. So I've been very impressed with him. And of course, I've been beyond impressed with Mkhitaryan. I mentioned on your pod, Steve, that, you know, we were talking about the MVP players in Serie A, talking about Ronaldo, Lukaku, Ibrahimovic. But for me, the way Mkhitaryan is playing, he almost really belongs in that conversation. So were you surprised that Mkhitaryan has even taken it up a notch from what was a good first season in Serie A?
Yeah, so when he arrived last year, you know, I knew the name Mkhitaryan. I don't watch a whole lot of Arsenal or United. I watch the Premier League here and there. But, you know, he was a lone veteran player with a name who's, you know, had some good years at Dortmund. I was intrigued by it. And he showed some flashes last year where he was a real difference maker. Last year, I wrote a piece on him calling him kind of like Fonseca's Weapon X because he would play, you know, the attacking midfield. He would play out on the wing when they were playing the 4-2-3-1. And he was producing some good results, but he was injured quite often, which was a problem for him. But this year, I never expected the production we've seen from him so far. 9 Serie A matches, 5 goals, 4 assists. You know, he's got a goal and assist in the Europa League. He's just been outstanding. You know, I used to think that Dzeko was like the best bargain signing of the American era. You know, cost him about 18 million euros, I believe, when they signed Dzeko, and he's, you know, been a 100 goal scorer for the club. You know, Mkhitaryan, I don't think at his age now, he's got the longevity of Dzeko with the club, but to get him on a free, basically, because he rescinded his contract with Arsenal at the end of last season and signed with Roma, I think I'd say a year plus a year option. You know, you can't ask for any better from what we've seen from him so far. I just hope, you know, they don't wear him out. And I was going to mention this a little bit later. But, you know, him and Pedro have been playing a lot of minutes so far. And I just hope that, you know, Fonseca manages those minutes a bit because we do know he had some injury troubles last year. But overall, I mean, he's been outstanding. Like you mentioned, he belongs in the MVP race through the first quarter of the season so far.
For sure, for sure. So, look, you know, Roma already had 2 exciting young center backs, Mancini and especially Ibanez, and Kumbula arrived, you know, with a lot of rightful hype. He was excellent at Verona. You know, he was linked to Inter and Lazio, ends up at Roma. Now, I know he's had injuries, was out a little bit, but what do you make of Kumbula so far?
Yeah, I mean, I love the signing when it happened. It was kind of out of nowhere. You know, there weren't really many rumors about it. You know, he was linked with Inter. He was linked with Lazio. He looked almost, you know, certain to go to both of those places at various points in the summer. Yeah. And for Roma to get him for what they did, not really shelling out much cash. I know they sent Mert 15 in the opposite direction on a loan with an option and a couple of the young players to offset the cost. I believe actual out-of-pocket expense on Kumbula, if they do sign him and all everything goes through with the 15 option, is under 20 million euros, which for a 20-year-old center back who stood out the way he did last year is really a bargain in this day and age, I feel like.
Yeah.
He's got a very high ceiling. He hasn't played a ton yet, like you mentioned. He had a little bit of an injury issue. He was diagnosed with COVID around the international break recently, so he's just coming back from that. You know, he was on the bench today for the Europa League match, first time he dressed in a while. Only 283 minutes so far in Serie A, but the couple matches he's played, while Smalling was recovering, they were playing the three young center backs. He looked great next to Ibanez. Ibanez was in the center. He was on the left, Mancini on the right. I love the young defenders Rome has brought in. Mancini's one of my favorite players on the team. Ibanez has been outstanding, like you mentioned on my pod. And Kumbula has joined right in. If they can keep that core together with Smalling, you know, it's a nice defense. And I think that's why we've seen such a big improvement in Roma's defense this year. He's pretty much the fourth option when all are healthy from what we've seen. But in a three-man back line and with Europa League and Serie A and a busy schedule this year because of the sort of compressed schedule because of COVID, he's going to have plenty of options as long as he's healthy. And I've seen nothing to dislike the signing. I think it's a great signing long-term for Roma.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. Absolutely. So I would say probably the other biggest, well, Pedro and a Bosman for sure, but Borja Mayoral was also a fairly big name, you know, to come in to kind of give Zeko a breather. So what do you make of him so far?
Yeah, so he got off to a bit of a rough start. Unfortunately, I missed most of the Europa League matches for work. I caught the last 20 minutes of today's match because it was actually on TV. He was already out of the match, but he has been coming on a little bit in Serie A too. In Dzeko's absence, he scored a goal recently in Serie A. He's been playing better. I know I was, you know, browsing Twitter when I was leaving work today. He was getting some good reviews. He scored a goal again. So he's got 3 goals in 5 Europa League matches. Not the stiffest competition, but, you know, he's starting to put the ball in the back of the net is what you want from a striker. Different player than Dzeko. You know, Dzeko's that more complete striker, hold up play, those kind of things. Mayoral's smaller guy, not the biggest striker like Dzeko, but he will press. He will work hard, a bit more of a goal poacher. Today's goal was like one of those opportunistic goals where a rebound came to him, put it in the back of the net. So good things are starting to happen for him. I think he's, you know, could be a pretty good player for Roma. I know it's a 2-year loan with an option to buy, so they'll have plenty of time to decide if they want to keep him around long term. Is he Roma's striker long term? We'll see. I think they will need another striker in addition because eventually Dzeko will, you know, be on his way out. He is 34 now. But I think he is a good striker to have, even if he's option 1A with another young striker down the road. So far, he looks like he has the instincts of a goal scorer. So we'll see how he continues to play out. But, you know, not a bad signing so far.
Yeah, well, one signing who's definitely been superb is Pedro. As I mentioned on your podcast, Roma just needs to keep going to the Premier League because it works out great for them. Like, look, obviously, Pedro's a great player, been a very good professional on top teams for a while, but comes at Roma at the tail end of his career. Did you expect him to come anywhere close to this level of performances since joining the club?
You know, to be honest, I was a little skeptical about the signing just because of his age when he came over. You know, winning mentality, he's played on plenty of winning teams, you know, Barcelona and Chelsea. But, you know, when you see a guy who's 33 coming over and you're like, well, you know, what do we do with such an older player? Where are you talking about, you know, getting rid of Dzeko because he's getting older? But he's been impressive too. You know, didn't have his best game Sunday against Napoli, which is the most recent appearance, but overall he's been good. 3 goals, an assist. And the thing I love, he brings that winning mentality, I think, which has been so important to Roma starting to turn the corners, bringing in players like Pedro and Smalling and Mkhitaryan who have played on bigger clubs, who have that winning mentality and those veteran presences. And I think he's so great for the veteran leadership part of it too, especially Roma has a young Spanish contingent with Mayoral, who we mentioned, Gonzalo Villar, and Carlos Perez. So all 4 of them ended up on the field together today in the Europa League. And I think just as a mentor, besides what he's doing on the pitch from a production standpoint, he's been a great signing there too, because, you know, it's great to have these young, talented players that Roma has so many of that we mentioned in defense, in attack, even in the midfield. you do need those veterans that are going to guide them and really teach them the ropes. And, you know, we lost Kolarov, so that was one veteran out the door. We almost lost Dzeko this summer. And a guy like Pedro just brings that winning mentality. You know, he knows the ropes. He knows what to do in tough situations. And I think it's been so important for Roma.
For sure. For sure. Yeah, Pedro has been a superb addition. Before we get to the trouble spot at the goalkeeper position, because I want to talk a little bit about this, let's talk about the two wing backs who've really impressed me. Look, Spinazzola, when healthy, to me is as good a wing back, Italian wing back, as we have right now. I thought Juve probably made a mistake letting him go. And look, Karsdorp, who arrived at Roma originally with a lot of hype, you know, had a lot of injuries, and he was really close to joining Genoa, and thank God for Roma, he stayed. So tell me, how exciting has it been to watch these two wing backs? Because you look at the league, that is a position that overall most teams aren't that strong. And it seems like Roma maybe have two gems there.
Yeah, I mean, Spinazzola, I'm a big fan of. You know, when they first made the deal last summer, I was a little disappointed to sell Luca Pellegrini. He was young, Roman-born, one of the top left-back prospects in Italy. But, you know, Spinazzola, you know, is a great player in his own right, as you mentioned. In the four-man back line last year, a bit disappointing. But once they made the switch to a three-man back line and he's playing more of a wing-back position, he's been awesome for Roma. I mean, especially this season, he's grown even more. After that failed move to Inter, it seemed like it almost lit like the light bulb in his head where he was like, you know what, this is my chance. I have to really, you know, grab the bull by the horns and get it going and show what I'm really worth. You know, he's a guy who's had injury issues in the past, but he's been fairly healthy with Roma, which has been huge for him. And he's aggressive down the left flank. He pushes hard down that left flank with the ball. He has great speed. Great closing speed to get back. He defends pretty well for a left back. And I mean, I know one of my co-contributors on Chiesa di Totti is not the biggest fan. We've had this conversation on our podcast, but I really like what Spinazzola brings to the table. The biggest thing with him is when he makes his decisions quickly with the ball, he's just such a more dangerous player. Sometimes he'll, you know, dawdle on the ball down in the left corner when he brings it up a little bit and he dribbles himself into corners. But when he's making quick decisions, he is so dangerous. He occasionally chips in a goal. Made a beautiful pass a couple matches ago to set up Mayoral's Serie A goal. So really strong player. I'm really happy Roma has him. And, you know, with Riccardo Calafiori waiting in the wings, the 18-year-old who scored today, losing Pellegrini wasn't the end of the world for a more match-ready player in Spinazzola, who's, you know, in his prime at 27 years old. Karsdorp on the other side, he has all the talent in the world. He's a pretty big body at the right back, pretty good speed. Pretty good skill. Like you mentioned, he came with a lot of hype. He hasn't always put it all together. He has turned into Fonseca's first option, it seems, at right back, because he's been getting the Serie A minutes when Bruno Paredes gets the Europa League minutes. The one thing I'd love to see from him a little bit more is a little bit more aggressiveness, both with the ball and without it, because he, like I mentioned, he's a pretty big body at right back, and he's got good physical traits. And he makes some plays where you're like, oh, that's a great run off the ball. He set up, you know, one of those plays where it opened up the left flank for Spinazzola, where he made a dummy run down the right. And like, you see those little things, you're like, he does good things, but then other times he does frustrate. Sometimes he will not track back as hard as you'd like and things like that. So I think he's got the talent to be a very good right back for Roma, which is, you know, it's a perpetual issue for them. You know, they've tried so many things ever since that big season from Maicon, you know, from Florenzi to Karsdorp to Perez to a whole bunch of other names. You know, so I wouldn't rate Karsdorp as highly as Spinazzola right now. I think he has the potential to be very good for them, but I would like to see some improvements from him nevertheless. And, you know, we'll see. If he can make those improvements, I think he could cement the right back position. If he doesn't, he might lose some minutes to Perez, and, you know, Roma might be out for a right back again next summer. So we'll see what happens there with him.
Okay. So let's get to the pain point at Roma, because I think this is really the one glaring weakness on the team, and I hope you know, it's addressed soon. So let's talk about the goalkeeper position. So obviously, you know, we had Szczesny, Alisson, who I thought were the best keepers in Serie A back to back at Roma. Then we had the nightmare that was Olsen, and then Roma broke the bank for their standards to get Paul Lopez. And last season, I have to say, you know, for a long time, I couldn't figure out if Pau Lopez was good or not. And then I landed on, he's probably not that good. So we saw Mirante holding down the fort for a little bit, but obviously at his age, sooner or later, it was going to catch up to him. On the positive, we talked about it earlier, at least Roma has a great defense center back wise. So tell me, on a scale of 1 to 10, how concerned are you with the goalkeeper position at Roma?
I'll go with a 7. You know, here's the reason. Short term, I think Mirante is okay. He has played well. I know the Napoli match was a disaster. He made a couple bad plays. That was the first real bad match he's had this year. So I don't want to weigh too heavily on that one match. But you're right. He's, I think, 37 years old now. So he's, if anything, he's, you know, very short-term goalkeeper. I think the bigger issue is long-term because Pau Lopez, like you said, is not very good. I don't know what Petrarca saw in him last year. I thought Petrarca had a very good market in his time with Roma, those couple of markets he had before he ran into issues with Pelota. The one place that Roma has struggled with in the past couple summers, though, is goalkeeper. I mean, you mentioned Alisson and Szczesny, and they were outstanding for Roma. And, you know, Alisson being sold was huge because, you know, he was the one of the big reasons that they made the semifinals of the Champions League that year. And you're not going to find an Alisson every day. But Pau Lopez, you know, the editor on my site, Bren, he did a great piece on Lopez a couple months ago, just like really examining his numbers, examining him as a goalkeeper. And the numbers aren't that impressive. And even in Spain, they weren't the most impressive numbers. So I don't know if they got, you know, suckered in because they wanted a goalkeeper who could play out of the back for fun with the building up from the back. But to me, and I've mentioned on my podcast before when we've talked about the goalkeeper position, my first priority from a goalkeeper is a guy who's going to stop shots. Distribution to me is secondary because if you can't keep the ball at the back of the net, if you're slow coming off your line, like we've seen from Lopez many times, you know, what you can do with your feet is not really that valuable because if you're conceding two bad goals a match, you know, it doesn't matter how well you can start to play from the back. So I think long term, they do need to find somebody if they have to get through the season with Mirante because the winter doesn't work out. You know, maybe somebody doesn't want to sell their keeper to Roma in the middle of the season. I think they can get by, but I just hope it doesn't cost them like Olsen did a couple years ago because Olsen, in many ways, cost them a return to the Champions League.
Well, for sure.
You know, if they had a different keeper, just an average keeper at best, they'd probably get those points ahead of Atalanta. And, you know, maybe Atalanta never makes the Champions League. So, you know, it's one of those hypothetical things. But, you know, they have people now that track those kind of things. And he cost Roma a few matches. So, Mirante hasn't cost them a match yet. You know, Sunday was tough, but the rest of the team didn't really show up either. So, hopefully he bounces back because I don't think Lopez is going to be the guy you want in the net for the whole season. And we'll see if they address it in the winter. It's a possibility. But curious with the way finances are now, how aggressive they go after a position like goalkeeper in January.
Yeah, no, that's very fair. And look, Pau Lopez was the most expensive keeper in Roma's history for sure. So I'm glad to hear you're more optimistic than I am with him. But I'm going to grant you a wish, Steve. I'm feeling very generous right now. I really enjoyed talking calcio with you. So if I could give you the opportunity to sign either Cragno from Cagliari, Silvestri from Verona, or Musso from Udinese, and they're all outstanding keepers, in my opinion, and they're obviously on teams where Roma would be a massive upgrade. Who would you pick and what?
Good question. So initially, when you gave me this question, I was thinking more along the lines of Cragno and Silvestri. I was thinking more along them, Drogowski. But then Musso is a great, great call. I think Musso is probably the highest ceiling of those three. I think Silvestri is the most, you know, ready right now keeper because he is, I believe, 27. And actually, he's 30. So he's, you know, at the, you know, one of his prime years for a goalkeeper. But I think Juan Musso, from what I've seen, is a very good keeper. I know and. You know, there's many Inter fans who I've heard on different podcasts calling for him as Handanovic gets older. So a couple summers ago, I wanted Cragno, but I think with Musso, I think I would probably go with Musso at this point if it was not a question of money. If it was a question of money for Roma, you'd probably look more towards a Silvestri. It was probably a little bit more affordable at his age. But if money's not an object, I'd probably go Musso of those three.
Okay, I like it. Okay, Steve. So I have to say it's been a real pleasure. And you and I have been recording for about an hour. And I have to say I really, really enjoyed chatting culture with you. So let's close on this. And we talked about it a little bit on your pod, but we're going to take it from a different angle. So look, you know, Roma wasn't in the Champions League last season. Serie A right now is a very unpredictable league, to say the least. But on a scale of 1 to 10, how optimistic are you that Roma gets back to the Champions League? And in your opinion, what needs to happen for Roma to get that done?
So from what I've seen so far, and being, you know, someone who's generally optimistic, I always try to go glass half full with Roma until things start to fall apart sometimes. I'll go with a 7.5. I'll go with a strong 7.5. I think from what I've seen so far, they can qualify for the Champions League. The league is wide open right now. You know, Milan's in first at 23. Then you have Inter and Sassuolo at 18. Juve, Napoli, and Roma on 17. And then you have, you know, Atalanta, Lazio, 14, Verona, 15. So it's a whole big mess of clubs within striking distance of each other. I don't think anybody's head and shoulders better than anybody this year. You know, Juve might grow into that. Milan might continue to pull away. We'll see. But I think for top four, Roma has a legitimate shot at it if they can start to get results against some of the bigger sides in Serie A. So they've played very well against the smaller clubs, especially this season. The problem under Fonseca has been that they haven't really found ways to beat those top six type clubs. I believe they are three wins, three draws, and nine losses, if I remember right, from after Sunday against, you know, big clubs in Serie A. So that's one thing Roma has to turn around. You know, they drew Juve earlier in the year, which, you know, was a little disappointing, like I mentioned earlier, because they had a 2-1 lead, man up, and they blew it at home. The Milan one was a good draw, I felt like, because they'd fallen behind a couple times and came back. But then you see Napoli, they got, you know, absolutely demolished on Sunday. So they're going to have to find a way to start beating some of these direct rivals for Champions League places. That's the first place they need to start, because they've been very good under Fonseca getting points off of smaller clubs. But overall, the signs have been good. I think Fonseca is doing a great job of building the team with the players he has. You know, he had a reputation last year of being a bit stubborn, sticking to his preferred 4-2-3-1 formation, which with the players Roma had wasn't really working as well as, you know, you would hope. And he made that switch to the 3-4-2-1, and it's really been a revelation for them. You know, Spinazzola has emerged. Some of these young center backs look really comfortable in the three-man back line because both Ibanez and Mancini came up in that three-man back line at Atalanta. It's worked well for players like Mkhitaryan playing behind Dzeko. Pellegrini's looking like a more complete player in this new setup. So I give Fonseca a lot of credit. I think they have to continue to build in that manner. Stick with the 3-4-2-1. Because it has worked well for them. And then I think the biggest thing is there's a couple of things that worry me. And one of them is what I mentioned with the teams, the record against the top six teams. The other is the age of Mkhitaryan, Pedro, and Dzeko, because they're relied on to play so many
games. Yeah. Yeah.
And Roma doesn't have much behind them right now. Carlos Perez is the backup basically to both positions for Mkhitaryan and Pedro. Pellegrini can play there as well, but they've preferred to use him more in the midfield role now, which I think has suited him well. When he played higher up in the Trequartista role last year, he kind of got lost in some matches and would just drift out wide. So I hate to tinker with him too much and play him there too much this year. So I think they need to address that in the winter market. El Shaarawy has been linked quite a few times. He almost made the move in the fall to Roma in September. I think they're going to revisit that either on a loan or if he's able to rescind his contract, which I've seen in recent days, he might look to do with his Chinese club. He'd be a nice addition because they do need someone to spell Mkhitaryan and Pedro. Myral's starting to grow, so I'm not as worried about Dzeko being spelled, but those two really need a rest once in a while, maybe against some of the smaller clubs in Serie A, because you don't want to have any injury issues or fatigue issues with those attacking players. So if they could get like a El Shaarawy type player on a cheap deal in January, I think that'd be a huge thing for them to really contend for top four. And the wild card I look at later down the line, depending on how the recovery goes, is Zaniolo, because, you know, so often, at least from my perspective, you know, he's kind of an afterthought this year because he's been out pretty much the whole year because he got hurt on international duty with Italy right before the Serie A season kicked off. And if they can get Zaniolo back come late March, early April, like he's saying he's going to come back and he can play even if it's 20 good minutes off the bench for them, he offers a whole different dimension to Roma's attack. And, you know, we saw in the summer, he almost turned into like a super sub when he was first coming back from the first ACL injury. So if he recovers well, he might be that extra piece that can get Romo over the top into the top four. But I would definitely, you know, hope that maybe they address goalkeeper or at least get some more solid play out of the goalkeeper position, like you mentioned earlier. And I think just spelling those older players are huge for them.
Steve, I can't thank you enough. This was a little bit different because you're a first-time guest and we had recorded your podcast before. So you and I have been chatting college show for an hour now. I can't tell you how much I enjoyed it and how confident you are. You have my respect, and I don't say that lightly. So I think we really need to promote Steve's work. It's outstanding. So we're going to put a link to what he does with Chiesa di Totti and all and check it out, because this was really great. So thank you so much for doing this, my friend, and I look forward to chatting with you again.
Thanks again for having me, David. Looking forward to it.